dbkmediaservices.com. You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk Podcast. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. Now, here are your hosts for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk, Shane Combs and Jeremy Ward.
Hello, SVC fans. This is Shane Combs of SVCSportsZone.com coming to you for the final time here in the 2012-2013 season on the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk podcast show. And I'm joined, as I always am, by Jeremy Ward. And Jeremy, as I get ready for this final show, I thought it was really interesting today as I was down at the district vote at Wellston, and I had two or three different coaches from different conferences talk to me about the podcast show and about how much they've enjoyed listening to it through SEO preps or an email or some various ways they had come across the podcast. And they were talking about how you know how this is as a coach. You get ready for a sectional draw a couple weeks back, or and this could be any sport, where you're looking for records of teams or looking to get information about an opponent coming up in a postseason. And they said it was so neat. Not only could you find stats and records and different things about the schools, but we even have a podcast show where you know, people who are familiar with the sports talking about these kids, and they just really some great compliments. And it's one thing to get those from the SVC, and obviously that's why we do it, is for our local fans. But it was really neat, and I think it really gave me a perspective of how much the website and the podcast show has grown when I had people from probably about three different conferences today make a comment about that. I was just wanting to maybe get your take here in the opening, and you're welcome here. Your view on the growth of the website, what we've been able to accomplish this past year, and then your excitement as we look at the top 10 moments from throughout this past year.
Well, I think that just speaks a tremendous amount to what you've been able to do with the website, and, you know, adding the shows. And it was kind of funny. I got a few texts from other baseball coaches when we didn't do a live show from the draw, that it was just another example of how spring sports, you know, aren't taken seriously. And they had nothing to do with the SVC.
Right.
So, I mean, just the fact that people take notice and we're able to publicize our athletes, and you know, I think it's really neat sometimes when you hear people that are outside a particular school or outside the conference speak to our kids by first name, like they know them, because they've been able to follow the last couple of years sports of sport and find out and learn about these kids. And I think that's what we're trying to accomplish, is just being able to shine some light on these athletes, and especially in the springtime, recognize these kids because they deserve it, and the hard work that they put in. And you know, why not celebrate it? You know, everybody talks. How many people go around there talking about high school sports at a reunion, at a graduation party, or what have you? So, you know, why not put it out there and let people listen to our opinions on that as well?
Well, I tell you, the one thing I wanted to start the show with, obviously the main part of our show this week is going to be looking at our top 10 moments from the past year. But one of the big things in our league this week was the SVC track meet. And fans, you can find those results on the website. Not a lot of surprises in the team or individuals, for that matter. A lot of the people we thought would win did so. But I had an interesting email this week. It was talking about enjoyed listening to podcast 5859 and the track and field talk. And it's kind of a long email here, so I'll summarize it just for time. But it was saying that they really disagreed with the idea of splitting up the track and field, because he says it's called track and field, and the medalist should be the all-around athlete. Talks about how cramps and muscle pulls and shin splints and knee aches and hammies and all those different things are just common all year long. And you know, people know when the big meets are, and that's the preparation. All of those prep meets throughout the year are the keys, and it got me thinking on this, Jeremy, because it went on to talk about how, you know, in the past with this is with Al Grubb here for Huntington, a name in the SVC that a lot of people know here, talking about some of the great things he'd accomplished, Jack Baston of Paint Valley and Bob Mattson, Uniota, and threw out a lot of old names. It was kind of neat to look back at some of the records and a couple records that went down here in this year's meet. But it got me thinking from our perspective of this. A lot of times we make comments just as sports fans through track where I think, especially the two of us, we are hardcore purists, I guess is safe to say, when it comes to baseball. Would you agree with that?
Oh, so absolutely.
I think what happens sometimes is we look as just competitors or sports people and how we want to tweak certain sports. But sometimes I think your purists are okay with the way it is because those are the ones that can truly appreciate what goes into it and what get. I thought the email was interesting because I think it gives you maybe me a different perspective on how much, instead of worrying about changing it so much, to maybe embrace the actual challenge. I mean, when you look at the Newman kid from Zane Trace winning four different events in the SVC meet, very, very impressive. What's your take on that email? Maybe or have we looked too far into changing it instead of just embracing what it is?
Well, you know, first of all, I think part of it is just getting the ideas and you know, taking these emails and taking comments from fans and commenting on that on the show. So it's not always like it's, you know, our idea or whatever. It's just a question that's posed. But this is exactly, I think, what we're after and what we've been able to do this year with the podcast is take, you know, the opinions of some of the purists, maybe somebody just getting into it. I think we've had a wide variety of comments from fans where maybe they didn't know and they wanted to answer a question, and others of people that I would consider, you know, experts kind of giving us our, you know, their two cents and asking us to chime in. So I just think this is what makes the show, you know, special and something that people are interested in. As far as the change goes, you know, I think that's true. I think you're always going to have, you know, two schools of thought. One, you know, the purist, you don't want to mess with things. The game's been around for a long time. The sport's been around for a long time. You want to, you know, keep its essence intact. On the flip side, you know, we think about how do we recognize more kids? How do we showcase maybe something that's been missing? So, you know, I suppose it's just the perspective that you look at it from.
Definitely true. And fans, as we go into the off season here and into next year, it's admin1@svcsportszone.com. Please keep giving us feedback because I'll respond to the inbox on the website throughout the summer. And then as we hope to return next year and continue to have these conversations. Well, obviously, the other thing, Jeremy, right now going on are your baseball and softball postseason underway. I was going to switch roles here a little bit. Let me kind of summarize baseball, and then you've talked about a different perspective. I've been so close to it all year. I just wanted to step back and kind of let you tell the fans what you think it all means. First, in our recap, Adina, Huntington, Piketon, Zane Trace all moving on. They all win in some different ways. Adina coming out of the 10 seed. They beat Paint Valley Wednesday night. They go up to Westfall Saturday in an 8-inning battle and find a way to escape 3-2. I had a chance to get over to Huntington yesterday, watch Lucas Sarver fire a complete game shutout. They rolled over North Adams fairly easy, 8-0. Zach Farmer, no-hitter, beats Lynchburg 3-0. And then Zane Trace was probably the biggest surprise with an instant classic walk-off. River Valley about shocked the top seed there, up 2-1. Zane Trace coming into the final at bat. They scored twice for the walk-off win. So Southeastern falls to Crooksville, and then Uniota, with a great effort, had to go back all the way to Gallia the next night. They fall 4-3. So in the end, a pretty successful run for the SVC. We knew in the one bracket SVC was going to beat up on each other. Jeremy, as you, I know you follow a lot of the softball, but I know as a fan, you really do keep an eye on baseball. Tell me what it means to just a fan in general as you are seeing all these scores come in over this past week on the baseball side.
Well, you know, I think sometimes the March Madness and the basketball tournaments get a lot of publicity for the upsets and the, you know, you build all this for, you know, for the postseason. You know, I think sometimes baseball and softball, we naively think that the favorites usually win, and because there's such emphasis on pitching that normally the better pitcher is going to come out on top. You know, good pitching beats good hitting every day of the week, right? Mm-hmm. So I think what we saw a little bit of was the parity and, you know, the depth of the teams, especially when you're talking about Division III.
Right.
There isn't that big of a gap from the top to the bottom. And, you know, there's a lot of teams that have the potential of winning a couple games and getting to a district final. And, you know, that's kind of my take, is just how you can't take anything for granted. You can't just, you know, take your pen out and start looking at matchups in the district finals or maybe even the regionals over at the VA. And you got to play the games. And certainly Edina proves that, you know, a program that's used to winning this time of year, you're certainly not going to look at, you know, overlook them. And then you look at the same thing where Zane Terrace was a favorite and they survive. So I tell you what, it's just, it's exciting time of year, and you just can't sleep on the underdog. You never know what might happen.
Well, Jeremy, as we continue to switch roles a little bit here this week, just to give that different perspective, why don't you summarize for the fans on the softball side who's moving on and who had their season come to an end, and then I'll kind of give my take on what it all meant to me as the scores were coming into the website.
Well, I spoke last week about how the tournament draw was put up or shut up time for the league, and wow, did our teams ever respond. Not only did you know, the league kind of dominate the sectional tournament, but you know, we're able to steal some of those top seeds, which gives them a nice outlook. So you're looking at, you know, Uniota moving on to play in the districts. You're looking at Zane Trace, and those were only two teams that were, you know, in a favorable spot as far as seeding goes. But Westfall knocks off the two seed Lucasville Valley, shutting them out. Huntington shuts out Peebles, you know, who at the draw had only lost one game, and then Edina, you know, knocks off a team that's been ranked in the top five, Division III, in the state rankings almost all year, in Eastern Brown, able to handle them 5-4, and I think it just speaks to and legitimizes all the publicity, all the accolades that we've given, you know, these athletes, and especially the pitchers in our conference from teams 1-5. It really just proves how good they really are and what they did to some very, very fine softball programs.
Well, I guess what all that means to me here, and please understand, I say this in a complete compliment to Elena Lytle, Morgan Gino, Gina Rossert, the Dunn Girl Battle, all the kids, is it made me stop and think, wow, this Uniota offense must be as advertised. And the reason I say that is it's just not the shutouts, Jeremy. It was the numbers that would come along with it. Elena Lytle struck out 17 batters against Peebles. Morgan Gino had the no-hitter against North Adams. And then I know you had spoke really highly of Portsmouth West. When you saw that draw, you really talked about how that could be one of the really great matchups in the sectional. And they win that one 3-1. Rossert with the complete game shutout of Valley. I guess when I saw that, I guess that's what really came to me. Obviously, Uniota can pitch. They can defend. But when I think about some of the numbers that the Uniota offense has put up, particularly in the second half of the year when they've gotten healthy, I guess that's the thing that jumped out at me is wow, if our pitchers in our league are really this good and they're this dominant against elite competition, just how good can we not only be behind the great pitching in Division III, but is this a special run maybe in store for the Lady Sherman? So those are some of the things that I would probably, again, just as a fan, I would probably look at some of the things coming in and hope that I'm right, obviously, over the next couple weeks here. So, fans, we will count down the top moments of 2012-2013 here shortly. But first, we start our season finale here on the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk podcast show by heading to the inbox, where one fan wants to know better to have quantity or quality when building a program. I promise fans of all sports will want to hear this discussion, so stay with us. great email, Jeremy, in the inbox. And I know our goal this week was to really do our top 10, but I could not let this email go by, really, because the great discussion piece that I think it, because it's about softball, but it's really about every sport if you think about it.
Right.
Here's the gist of the email. It's talking about with spring season just about over, and they're looking to the off season. They're looking at softball programs. It used two programs, and I don't think it was trying to single out any one program. I think, honestly, the emailer used these two programs just because of where they happen to be in the league and what some of the feeder systems, if you will, have in store for these programs. It went with Uniota 13-1 as the league champion, and then it looked at Southeastern finishing 1-13 with the overall record of 1-21. And it talked about how Uniota has 13 players on the roster and Southeastern is 10+, but then Uniota does not field a reserve team. Southeastern does. Goes on to talk about middle school, how Southeastern has a lot of different kids playing. Uniota does have some, but not quite as many. So I guess to make a long email short for the discussion piece, is they're asking, is it better in Uniota's situation, even though they have far bigger enrollment, to have that competition within where the uniforms are elite to come by and the kids that are there, you obviously have a great quality of talent? Or is it better to have the quantity of talent in your feeder system, giving yourself a better chance to get more kids playing and building up? So I guess, Jeremy, this is obviously something that I'm going to have trouble not being very, very subjective toward the Southeastern side of things because of what my career in coaching and teaching has put me in a smaller school. So before I comment, I wanted to kind of throw this to you. When you read this email earlier in the week, what was some of the first things that come to mind that we need to start with in this discussion?
Well, this is something that's crossed my mind, and obviously you know, with my ties to Uniota, concerns that I have with the numbers. But, you know, I think it's a different perspective for me. And like you said, being at Paint Valley and being in a smaller school, I can share those sentiments because I've been involved in places where, you know, the programs, you're just fighting for numbers and you're fighting for athletes. And I think the one thing that you have to consider is the overall opportunities. You know, do the kids have a lot of choices in what they can be a part of? And the level, you know, the level that the kids put in outside of just what they do for their school teams. And I think so those are two things that you have to look at that play a bigger role than just the sheer numbers. So I'll kind of throw that back to you and talk. Get your comments.
Well, I guess here's the thing. Let me talk on the Southeastern side of the email first. Is I've always tried to tell my little league coaches, my junior high coaches, regardless of what sport or program I've tried to be the leader of, that the one thing we have to do is we have to be 100% perfect in our development. And what I mean by that, obviously, it's going to be hard to be perfect at anything. But what I mean by that is, If I'm a seventh grade teacher at a school like Paint Valley and I only have 35 boys or 35 girls in my class, period, like in the entire year, so one class might just be 35 to 40 kids that you're choosing from in your program, you have no choice. If you only get, say, 9 or 10 of those kids out on the seventh grade volleyball team or the seventh grade boys basketball team, you know, there's no cutting. There's no handpicking this. Well, this kid has a bad attitude. We'll send them home. Or this kid has this. Well, those are the kids you have, and you're going to have to put them in situations and try to develop them not only as players but as people and teach them work ethic and those sorts of things. Now, there is one thing that you could look at let's say at the junior high level. If you have 19 kids and you try to have two different teams, well, all of a sudden, if you have problems missing practice and you have different things, how do you discipline that? How do you discipline that and still keep two teams on the field? So I do think there's some coaches out there that look at it, let's choose an elite 12 where not only the kid but the families are on board. They're locked in. They're going to be there. If we have practice, they're going to give us a commitment. If we have games, they're going to give us a commitment. And we think we can get a higher quality or experience out of it that's going to help the program more moving forward. So I think there's a really delicate balance here of what the JV team can do. But I'll tell you what, if you have the resources, resources meaning fields, coaching, money, busing, the schools behind it. I think it's a must to try to have as many kids playing throughout the program. I understand it's that argument of, well, I'd rather have a high quality or the higher product on the field or the court. But I just feel like the more kids you can get playing, the percentages of you someday having seven good basketball players are going to go up, or you eventually having seven or eight good volleyball players someday is going to go up. I will throw this back to you, Jeremy. Do we sometimes get in a habit in our league, because over the last 10 years, as we've documented here on SVC Sports Talk pretty well in several occasions, because of the enrollment, do we sometimes give the bigger schools a pass because they could, I don't know, I guess it's unfair to say accidentally, but sometimes they can accidentally finish third or fourth in a sport. You see what I'm saying?
Right, absolutely.
Where is it maybe catching up with them when we don't realize it is catching up with them? Perhaps it's catching up with them in the postseason, or perhaps it's catching up with them when they're not putting up more league titles, or maybe at least contending for them. Am I being a little harsh there toward the bigger school, or is that fair?
Well, I think the biggest argument, and probably the one thing to consider, is think about the sports where numbers are a big deal. And, you know, football is the first one that comes to mind. You don't see a whole lot of teams rolling out 22 kids and, you know, dominating the top of the standings.
Sure.
And you don't get a huge disparity. It's not like Uniota and Zane Trace are dressing twice as many kids as Paint Valley and Edina.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, when you think about that, that kind of speaks to your side of the argument. If you get the kids to play, you know, you've got more opportunity. Well, then you look at the bigger sports. Well, they offer more sports. They offer more opportunities for some of the kids to play, which means they offer more choices. And what I see, and a lot of places are going through these issues with numbers where the success of their program isn't necessarily suffering. In the case of Uniota, they've struggled with numbers in softball for a lot of years now, but it hasn't affected them in the standings because of choice. Whether there's a lot of kids that play select soccer, there's a lot of kids that play club volleyball, there's a lot of kids that play AU basketball. And when they see there are elite athletes playing their second or third sport, you know, and I see it a lot with, you know, a lot more in girls. If they're not, you know, if they see that the core group of athletes in that class or in that group are a lot better than them, they're a little more likely to choose to do something else.
I see that, yeah.
And I think that happens a lot, you know, and I saw that when I was at Vinton County with basketball, that sometimes when you get four or five kids that put a lot of time into it outside and really, you know, raise their game to a higher level, you don't get the casual kids just coming out because maybe they see the writing on the wall, or, you know, maybe they just don't feel like they can put that kind of commitment. So they go for something that, you know, they have more of a passion for. But well, your point on getting kids out and, you know, at these smaller schools, all your athletes have to play all the sports.
Yes, yes, I agree. And excuse me, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I wanted to get your point on this too, because I guess I'll tease a little bit on our top 10 where we have a situation where we happen to mention a little coaching situation. And I guess it applies here a little bit too, because I think sometimes this is a coaching philosophy. It's a community philosophy. It's a school philosophy. And the more coaching turnover you have, the more that philosophy changes and the harder it is to get consistency. If I look at resource, I said earlier with resources, well, there's a lot of schools where if you're going to try to have a JV softball team and a junior high, say an eighth grade softball team and a sixth grade softball team and a fourth grade softball team, they might be waiting on one field.
Mm-hmm.
and there's literally, I've literally seen softball practices or baseball practices start like at 7:30 and they'll try to get as much in before dark. Where,
right.
You know, you look at, let's just go and use Southeastern just because of the email here. What a beautiful facility they've constructed out there. They
right.
have so many multiple diamonds and
yes.
different things. I know I've been out there a couple of times in the spring where they're literally between baseball and softball have like five or six different diamonds going. Now, is that right. going to change it overnight? No, but if the coaching turnover and the commitment stays true and that philosophy stays consistent for 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years in a row, that's probably the hardest thing for fans to realize is if you're going to put a philosophy into the fifth, sixth, seventh grade, you better understand that you're talking 5, 6, 7 years before that philosophy can really take over. So I think that's really important there. And I don't know, Jeremy, you can comment better than I can. Is that as big a deal with the bigger school, or are we looking at two different storylines here when we look big school to small school?
Well, I think that's kind of the interesting point. You look at UNIT on the flip side of that, and there's a varsity diamond. There's nothing else. There's nothing else by the school that the school has to offer. You know, there's not a field at the elementary school like there are at a lot of schools, or like there used to be at a lot of schools. You're competing with for the city park or, you know, private fields to practice, and that is a huge deal. And the same thing with gym space. You know, how many gyms do you have available to get your kids in to play? But to one point, you know, I'll build off the coaching because I think that's a very important point. But even take that a step further to the younger levels. If you have, I mean, let's just say if you can put 30 basketball teams out there, that's great, you know, with your youth leagues. Do you have people that can instruct those kids? Do you have 30 people that can instruct those kids, or do you have 5 people?
So it goes back to resources.
Yep. Yes, and I've heard people say, well, if you have 5 coaches that can make a commitment to put the time in and have enough knowledge to really teach the kids, do you want 5 coaches coaching 5 teams, or do you want 5 coaches coaching 5 teams and 20 other people that you're just trying to get to fill a space? And it puts them in a bad spot, and it puts the kids in a bad spot. So there's a lot of aspects of this and a lot of perspectives that, you know, you have to sit back and think about when you address this. But it's a great email and something that I think we all can relate to one way or another.
Well, we really appreciate the feedback from the fans throughout the year. And again, that's what's made this such a success, and it's what makes it really fun. So fans, we do appreciate that. All right, so fans, after the break, we start down maybe I should say up the list as we look at the 10th most memorable moment during this past SVC sports season. Well, Jeremy, as we start in here on our top 10, I'm real excited about the list. We brought together a lot of different things, spent a lot of time trying to rank them a little bit, debated back and forth. Fans, as we go through here, feel free to drop us an email and let us know, agree, disagree, and we can comment back and forth on the website throughout the summer. So, Jeremy, here we go. Let's start with number 10.
Number 10.
A date at state. We go with Lady Mustangs putting girls golf on the map. And Jeremy, I guess what I thought was so significant about this, anytime you go to the state and something, it's going to be a big story for your league. But I thought what was so significant with this was the growth of girls golf from the team perspective. I know Zane Traces, Michelle Shams has had a nice little run in the SVC here. I don't have that in front of me. I believe she went on to play at Finley. And then I know Shania Irvin at Huntington had played throughout the year with the boys, and then she went into the girls. She was an all-league golfer as a junior, one shot short of state as an individual. But again, I thought what was so significant here was the team impact that Westfall has put down. And I noticed there was a couple of those kids that signed to play at the next level, and I thought that was really important. Sonny Stewart and I had that here in front of me, and Aaron Roush went to Columbus State. They were two players on that Westfall team that's been back-to-back to the state. Brianna Post is obviously a really good player. Mary Roush, Devonna Kaiser. So there's just a lot of good things going on there at Westfall. But more than the story itself of just a team going to state, Jeremy, talk to me about the significance that you see of how this could possibly help a sport grow in this area as young ladies grow up watching this happen.
Well, you do have, you know, you do have some resources, and I've noticed that there are a lot of a lot more younger girls now getting involved in golf, and there are a lot of opportunities there. And you know, like Shania plays with the boys all year, and then gets to play in the girls tournament. And I know there always seems to be one or two, but the fact that you can, you know, build a team and get the, you know, to be able to have the success and get the opportunities that the Westfall program's been able to have, really, Shane, it's scary to think that, you know, as many strong athletes there are in fall sports in the SVC, if our girls' golf takes off, I mean, man, we kind of dominate the fall as it is, and in the other sports, it's hard to believe that, you know, there's enough athletes to, you know, to continue to have that kind of success when there are so many fall sports to begin with. But you know, it's certainly a thing where, you know, you like to see kids find their niche. And sometimes, you know, you can golf if where you can't play volleyball, or you can't run. So I think it's just awesome for these kids to get that experience.
Well, it's interesting this year, because I want to say Southeastern had a girls team, Zane Trace had a girls team, obviously Westfall, and some different schools trying to come up with I want to say Adina, I believe, fielded a team most of the time. And I had a lot of people say, well, there's such a talent gap, Shane, between Westfall and these other kids. But here's the thing. I was fortunate enough to be a part of the inaugural season as a player on the boys' side. And you have to go back to the fall of 93 for that. So for our SVC fans listening out there, they had some – Uniota had golf teams, Huntington had golf teams. There were golf teams in the 80s throughout the SVC. I'm not saying that. But when the sport was adopted as a league sport, that was the fall of 93. So it would be your seniors in 94. And there were probably only one or two teams that were any good, and probably the fall off after like the top 10 individuals was not very good. But I'm telling you what, over the next 4 to 5 years, the talent in golf just skyrocketed across the league, and now it's really become a pretty big deal in our league. I know I enjoy covering it. We're always very successful. So do you see a parallel there, Jeremy, that maybe how Westfall could kind of be the launching pad, if you will, of how this can kind of take off? Because obviously for the girls' league to be successful, you want to get those, you know, 5, 6, 7 years from now, you want the Michelle Shams and the Shania Irvins to be on the girls' side, being the stars of those leagues and kind of being the player of the year candidates and those types of things. Agree?
I agree. And I think you can look at that at any sport that takes off. If you have a handful of kids, or you have a team that takes it to the next level, it makes it a little more popular, and it makes it a little easier to, you know, target that. You know, when you can see somebody having success, you know, that makes you hungry for that success. And it's difficult. You know, you think about a high school kid to go be the only girl, or to go be the only player, you know, in your school that wants to play golf, you know,
absolutely,
that's difficult.
Right.
So just the fact that it gets popular, that in itself is awesome. And I think you've seen that. I think that's what's happened in our league with volleyball. And I think you've seen it with softball. A handful of elite players just rise the entire talent level of the surrounding league because, you know, they gain some attention.
Well, again, anytime you start a list, Jeremy, it's you can argue one or two that get left off, but I really felt like putting the list together that there's no way we could leave that off. So again, number 10, a date at state, Lady Mustangs putting girls golf on the map.
Number 9.
Some records fall while others continue to grow. And here I'm talking SVC track meet. So one of our most recent stories, Jeremy, comes in at number 9 on our SVC Sports Zone top 10. Stories in the year in review. And I guess you kind of yawn and say, oh, Uniota boys, Zane Trace girls win again. 7th straight on the boys' side, 11 out of 12. That's ridiculous. And then 6th straight now for the Zane Trace girls. And, you know, it's so predictable. And we talked about this last week, and I think some of the purists just enjoy the challenge. They see a Logan Chaney or Trevor Dottillion setting records. I know last year we had several records fall. And with track, sometimes I think there's such a ceiling that it's so hard to push forward that sometimes when you get to an elite level, you know, there's only so much more to knock off a time or to raise in your height or in your length of a jump or your throw. I guess it's one of those things. We talked about this briefly from our email, Jeremy, that sometimes you just have to step back and enjoy greatness and be a purist and enjoy the process that goes into the domination from these people. What's your take on number nine here?
Oh, absolutely. And I'm sure, you know, this fuels a lot of fire. I think the track and field is a sport where numbers is key, and you see, you know, our bigger schools enrollment wise, you know, have an advantage. And take nothing away from those athletes or those coaches that are tremendous, because to sustain that kind of success over that period of time is remarkable. But, you know, this is another area where, you know, some of the smaller schools are going to question, how can we get all these kids out to be able to compete with the elite athletes and the depth of the teams that, you know, the Zane Trace and Union Yoda can put out there. But I agree with you. The purists say, hey, you have to love this and to know that it's not just the SVC, that these are teams that, you know, have to be reckoned with beyond, you know, as we start into the district level, you know, this week.
I think the key point that was made in the email along with what you just said, Jeremy, was the team sports or the team titles. And when it comes to track, are very enrollment driven. But that's where the postseason comes into play here, where now your individuals start to take over the podiums, if you will, in the star role. So I think that's a great point to cap off here. Again, number nine, some records fall while others continue to grow, highlighting the SVC track meet.
Number eight.
Proving preseason predictions. Jeremy, I take you back to Friday, February the 8th. Piketon holds off Zane Trace for the title in boys basketball. Such a great basketball season. Enjoyed it. Pretty much knew Piketon was the best team from the word go. Were they going to be able to handle the bullseye? They were. Watched two just incredible head-to-head matchups with Piketon, Zane Trace. After that February 8th, the next night on February 9th, Craig and Moore goes over the 1,000-point mark. So Moore, Farmer, Brabson and company all kind of handle that bullseye, and they're able to hold off a really good Zane Trace team and some other teams such as Uniota Southeastern, some teams that were kind of pesky in the standings. And congratulations to Coach Lyseth and the Red Streaks on a title. Jeremy, your take on the boys basketball league this year?
Well, I think you summed that up well. You know, just the bullseye effect, and I think Piketon wore that, you know, all year, and that group of seniors and the pressure that was put on them and the emergence of Zane Trace and their program, and, you know, just the dangerous individual players and some of the teams in the league that made them earn that night in and night out, as, you know, a lot of the teams that were in the bottom middle of the league, you know, really got a lot better. So I think there were a lot of surprises in the boys basketball league this year and a lot of intriguing things that happened, which make it even more remarkable that Piketon was able to be the favorites and, you know, not relinquish that as the year went on.
Well, I think that's a great point. And as we cap the show off later, we look ahead to next year and how different things could look. But for now, in our number eight spot, proving preseason predictions, we honor the Piketon Red Streaks as they hold off ZT for the title.
Number seven.
The untold story. I'm going to go with Zach Farmer and the Red Streaks here this spring in baseball, as well as Uniota softball, as they kind of rolled to the easy league title. And the reason I say untold here, Jeremy, is obviously I think this story could end up moving up the top 10 if we were to redo it here in a couple weeks. You get to take the sense maybe here that we could be in for a special ending to spring. As we laughed a little bit last week, those lucky Red Streaks, you know, Zach was awfully lucky here the other day, not giving up a hit in their sectional final win. It'd just be fun to see what they can accomplish. Obviously we have plenty of SVC flavor in the district, led by Piketon. But then on the softball side, as I said, I'm becoming a believer in this Uniota offense, and it's one of those things where, you know, until they run into the wrong pitcher, you got to feel like they're going to be able to put 2, 3, 4 runs on the board. And just your take here on what maybe is in store still, that maybe number seven will eventually become much higher on our list. What's your take on the baseball softball tournament runs?
Well, I think it is. It's out there not only for Piketon and for Unioto in baseball and softball, but I think there's, you know, there's some really good opportunities for you know, the league as a whole to make its mark into the district finals and onto the regionals. But I think when you talk about the pressure that the postseason brings, you know, you talk about Unioto's lineup in softball, and you talk about being able to run Zach Farmer out there, and just the ability of Piketon to win close games and to never say die, be able to come back at the end of games. Those are all the things that, you know, you look at, and the intangibles that it takes, you know, to get lucky in the tournament. And, you know, and that's really, you know, that's things that you talk about. You're going to have to get lucky every once in a while. But you certainly put yourself in that situation enough, luck's going to find you.
Now, Jeremy, correct me if I'm wrong here. I was looking at the baseball brackets. I don't have softball in front of me, but we were talking if Westfall and Zane Trace are able to win one more, that would guarantee them in the district final one going to the regional. Is that correct?
Yes, and actually Huntington and Piketon, if they both win, then they would play each other. So there, it is possible. And again, when you steal the top seeds, you know, you're really looking at this point, the only true underdog, I would say, would be Huntington going against Wheelersburg. So I think there's a real good opportunity for the SVC to have some regional representation.
Well, similar here on the boys' side, I know Zane Trace and Huntington are very capable in their next games. That would put them in an all-SVC district final. Piketon, obviously, is the favorite in that other bracket. And then Edina, very capable in this next game. And then obviously they'd run into a Wheelersburg team, but at that point you'd feel like you're playing with house money. Right. Edina, very capable of winning another round. So, again, the untold story, I think, really fits good here because it just kind of sums up of all the opportunity out there, and it's probably a little unfair of us to lock that in there at number 7 until we see how the rest of it plays out. But again, Piketon Red Streaks alone, 1962 is the last time they win an SVC championship in baseball. So that alone makes them worthy of a top 10 spot. And then maybe we'll have to revisit this. So again, number 7, the untold story, the Piketon Red Streaks and the Unioto Lady Shermans SVC champions.
Number 6.
An early statement. Let's go football here, Jeremy. Let's go back week 4, which we know here in the SVC is the opening night of SVC play. You kind of got the sense that week 4 or not, the SVC championship was going to be decided, and boy, did Westfall put the statement out there, 42-14 over Piketon. Trent Williamson that night, 197 through the air, 3 touchdowns, ran for another. Isaac Brapson, 221, had a rush TD and a two-point conversion, and we kind of knew from that night on that those two special signal callers were going to go on to have great senior seasons, but there was just something unique about this Westfall team. They obviously went through a unique situation with the coaching staff, but at the end of the day, a very senior-loaded group and a special leader there taking the snap on every play. Your take on Westfall's football run there, Jeremy, and how that week 4 kind of maybe let you know something that, you know, something to come over the next 5 to 6 weeks.
Well, I think you can even carry that beyond football. You know, you mentioned, you know, the senior quarterbacks there with Williamson and Brabson, but just the senior heavy teams that Westfall and Piketon had that transitioned not only throughout the football season and for them to have great years and playoff appearances and so on and so forth, but just the success that senior class of both these schools was able to have across the board. And, you know, again, we talk about pressure. That's a lot of pressure to put on those kids, and they were able to answer the bell. So I think that's a great spot for that game because that kind of was a kickoff to the SVC season for us and boys. And, you know, what a special year for the seniors from those two programs.
Now, we did have the week 9 scare. Westfall beats Edina 28-23. Obviously, Ryan Wells of Edina is another great story that I thought about here in putting the top 10 together. He obviously had a phenomenal year as the run of Edina running backs continued. But the one thing I wanted to get your take here, Jeremy, I was thinking as I was putting this list together, I'm such a basketball, baseball guy that those are double round sports. the football mm-hmm. scenario of it's one and done. I mean, if this would have been another sport where Westfall puts the whooping there on Piketon a little bit, because that game was a lot closer than that in the first half, and then Westfall right. kind of pulled away and went. But there's no other chance. At Piketon, you walk in the locker room and you no longer even control your own destiny, where that would never be the case in another sport. How much do you think – because I haven't had much success or much experience in that format. How much do you think in a sport like football that would be a lot more pressure involved than, hey, here's our one chance to beat this team?
Well, and I think that's where football is so much more about X's and O's. And, you know, you can say that about every sport. But, you know, there's always this debate, which coach is, you know, which sport is harder to coach. And I think there's where football coaches would tell you, well, hey, you know, yes, we have, you know, 5-6 days to prepare for every opponent. And there's video and every, you know, the stats, there's no secrets. Everybody knows what everybody does as far as statistically. But you have got to not only prepare an offensive and defensive game plan, you have to study all this information you have, and you have to motivate your kids and manage your kids throughout the week to prepare for those games. So, you know, with all that said, you know, I think coaching is a very important aspect of that, that you have kids that believe in what you're doing.
Well, that's good stuff. And again, that's why we go number six, an early statement there with Westfall beating Piketon on their way to an SVC champion. Well, Jeremy, now let's take a look at the top five stories of 2012-2013 as the list is starting to look a lot like Christmas. Stay with us and we'll explain. Jeremy, as we start to separate those first five up here to the elite five, if you will, it was tough because a lot of those we've already had definitely could have an argument. And I try my best to be as objective as possible. Obviously, I have my favorite sports. I love all sports, but we're all guilty of having the ones that we follow a little bit more or a part of. And I guess that's why when it comes to first one here in our second five, if you will, this was a no-brainer for a top five. As let's go girls basketball here as we go to number five, Jeremy.
Number five.
It was the final SVC game before Christmas. We take you back to Thursday, December 20th. And boy, Jeremy, as I was getting updates through the phone, as I always do, and I'm watching the game that I watch, it's just a It's crazy to digest everything that comes in. You know, there's some nights that are just a little bit more special, and I hate to use the word special because there was unfortunate things that happened here too. But what I mean by that is there's some nights that just seem more significant would be the better word. Right. As I, you know, a lot of times you get scores come in, and you know it's no big deal. It is what it is. You kind of expected to see this team beat this team, and then this score comes in, and you're like, well, you know, I probably thought they would win, but that's a little closer than I thought it was. But on Thursday, December 20th, I go back and I see just a lot of different things happen. That was the night Torrey Cox goes down with the injury, and that obviously made it Adina's league to lose at that point. To Uniota's credit, I was really impressed how they stayed the course, if you will, and really locked in a couple times against an Adina team that was just far more talented at that point. And then eventually Westfall kind of ended the Uniota run. But on that same night, back on Thursday, December 20th, I was watching the Zane Trace Huntington game on that particular night, kind of a blowout Lady Pioneer win. But up at Westfall, very interesting game with Adina. Lady Warriors only lead 31-28 at the half. Jenny Grigsby hits the 1,000-point mark, and the Lady Warriors break it open in the second half. And that was kind of the night where the league kind of changed. Jenny was able to get that milestone out of the way. Uniota obviously took on a completely different identity. And then the rest of the league kind of took turns beating up on each other as some of our younger teams got a little bit better into the second half of the year. Jeremy, as you go back to that night, and obviously you get that news and you understand what's going on and you see some of those other scores, take us through maybe your thought process of what you thought happened to the league on that one night.
You know, that's an interesting point. I think a lot of people, you know, were just not quite sure how Adina was going to react to, you know, their own loss of graduation to Autumn Smith. And, you know, there was kind of this buildup for that final first round, you know, end of the first round game with Adina and Unioto. And then, you know, with Tori getting injured late in the game against Piketon, it just kind of deflated a lot of that buildup. So, you know, like you said, to Unioto's credit, being able to battle back and have an exciting environment for those last, you know, for those games with Adina, and you know, really just a testament to Jenny Grigsby and the other Adina seniors that, you know, were even better than they were the year before. And you're talking about to do what they did in Division III. That have been dominated by the Oak Hills and the Eastern Browns in the past, as far as, you know, the path into the regionals, and just an exceptional group of young ladies and what they were able to do, and how impressive they were as a team, just their team defense and their team offense. You know, it's just a special thing to watch.
Well, I definitely didn't want to sell short the Zane Trace beating of Adina, costing them the gold ball. And I'm glad you mentioned it there too, Jeremy. I definitely wanted to highlight Adina going to the regional and their special postseason run. But I guess when I was looking at this from an SVC perspective, I just looked at it as on that December 20th evening, so many different significant things took place that kind of shaped the rest of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I went with that. But again, you obviously make a great point there with Adina's tournament run and the great year they had and the great career that Grigsby and the seniors had there at Adina. So again, number five, it was the final SVC game before Christmas as we were looking back to Thursday, December 20th.
Number four.
Jeremy, I tell you what, I'll give you credit here from just reminding me of all the different ones. I had it on the list, but I guess until you and I had talked a little bit about this and I started actually putting them down, did I not realize how significant a story, like it or not, that it had become in the SVC, and that is coaching turnover. And I started to look through here from Westfall football and now Bartholomew at Huntington and Coy at Southeastern, Westfall volleyball, Reinhardt at Huntington. We had to return a Shoemaker to the sideline at Paint Valley. Everything with Lyseth that had happened where we thought he was gone and now it looks like he might be coming back. And Urich at Southeastern, Jaron Cox at Adina, Dunkel at Zane Trace we've heard about. Bryden Ball now at Huntington. There's a lot of unique situations, and I guess in today's time, coaching longevity is hard, but as we talked about earlier, and this was the tease I had out there earlier, it's still so, so important, and I think this is part a school's responsibility. It's a coach's responsibility. Sometimes you have coaches that because of when they start families and different things like that, or their jobs, or they have a want to maybe go from teacher to principal. Some people just kind of, they're not teachers and they kind of look school to school. And, you know, you'll hear people use the term talent chasers. I don't know if I like that. I don't know if it's fair or not, but that is a term I hear fans use. I think the responsibility probably is shared by three or four different levels. But I think the one thing that can't be debated, as we talked earlier, Jeremy, is the importance of the coaching longevity. And when you have that one philosophy in place at the lead of a program, boy, does that make it easier for everyone else to follow in line. Would you agree?
I absolutely agree. And, you know, I think there are some factors here, obviously, with the change in the way the state retirement is going. You have some administrative change. You have people that, you know, are trying to get out and retire. And I don't think that directly was the effect of these changes, as most of these people didn't go into retirement with a couple exceptions. But it's the trickle down effect. You know, that opens up administrative positions change, which changes relationship with coaches, or you know, coaches that might go on to administration and give up coaching. So I think you had all those factors play in. You know, the economy is a factor, just the climate of schools is a factor. And I think you hit the nail on the head here. With all of those things going on, it's a very dangerous time. And you need to be very careful. And, you know, high school sports are a small part of the educational system. But when you're talking about the communities that we have here and the traditions that we have here, it's very dangerous for teams that have had some success to make good decisions so that they can maintain that.
I tell you what, I look through so many successful programs and very few programs have had three, four different coaches in a 10-year spurt and still keep the dominant level. Right. When you go through some of the things, when I think of an Ed Yates or a Laura Smith, I think of Lori Merriman for the longest time there at Westfall, and now what she's able to start to develop at Zane Trace, and even some of the sports that have tried to chase down some of those people. Like, think of what Tina McGill's done with Huntington Volleyball. Always a very, very good product on the floor and very successful in the top half of a really good league. And I just think that the longevity kind of keeps things in line, because what happens is, as we said earlier, one person might have a different philosophy for junior high, and someone might have a different philosophy for little league, and someone might have a different philosophy for JV. Well, those types of philosophies, as we said earlier, take 4, 5, 6 years sometimes to get in place. So if you're going to have 4 and 5 coaches every 8, 9, 10 years, it just makes it impossible to have any consistency. I guess before we move on here, Jeremy, I think it's worth asking you this. Is there one particular model out there that you think is balanced at all that could be maybe a model for people to go off of in the SVC? I'll kind of put you on the spot there. Is there one that jumps out at you on, oh, wow, they really get it?
Well, I'm not sure that there's a particular model, but the one thing I think that, you know, a lot of people don't see and maybe not, maybe they don't take put enough stock in, is the relationship that coaches have with other coaches. And when you're talking about turnover, it's not only just turnover in, say, a football program, but if you're having turnover in football and in basketball, or, you know, any sports, you know, boys with the boys sports, girls with girls sports, if you don't have some sort of consistency where everybody knows what's going on, when you're sharing athletes, there is a lot of opportunity for, you know, negativity and putting one program against the other. And, you know, you've seen it a lot of schools. There'll be a dominant program and the other ones are just on the bottom because, you know, maybe it's the dominant personality of the coach. Maybe that's not all it. But the relationship between coaches from sport to sport, I think, is a huge factor. And the ones where, you know, people come in and they're willing to cooperate and they're willing to share and they're willing to sit down and set up a plan with the administration and the other coaches, I think those are the schools that you see being able to succeed in multiple sports.
Well, again, number four here, we go with coaching turnover as we highlight all the changing of some of our sideline generals and leaders of programs in the SVC.
Number three.
A double dozen, and I think where we're going to go here, Jeremy, is Uniota Cross Country, 12th straight SVC title. The ZT girls win again as well as they continue to roll. And then the Uniota Golf Program, they win their 12th outright title in just 20 years of a league. You add in the one they had, I guess you'd have to make it the Baker's dozen. Here they had the 13th, but we'll go 12 and 12 here. Uniota Cross Country, 12 straight, and then Uniota Golf, they've won the league 12 out of 20 years of existence. Obviously, a lot of district, regional, and state success in those programs as well, and I guess it's kind of fitting right on cue, Jeremy. The one consistency over those times would be Coach Paxton, Coach Drummond. I guess it kind of fits right in line. Your take on the incredible run of those two programs?
Well, you know, I think sometimes people underestimate the influence of coaching, and I think this is a perfect segue to some of the things we talked about before. I think some people think, well, if you have kids that can go out and run, it's a, you know, the kid has to go out and run. The coach isn't running beside him, telling him what to do. And, you know, in golf, you can't go out there and coach them while they're playing. So there's got to be a lot of commitment made by the athletes. Well, some people look at that like, well, anybody could coach those kids. Well, it's the exact opposite. You're talking about teenagers, getting them to be self-motivated enough and to have, you know, enough composure and presence to maintain all of the things that they prepared for and do them while they're by themselves. I mean, could you imagine in basketball just going up and sitting in the stands and letting your kids just play the game out? I mean, that's really what we're talking about here. So I think the consistency of coaching is a huge factor.
Well, let me interrupt here real quick, Jeremy. And I know I'm letting the fans know. I know we're going to be on a little longer this week here because it's our final show and we have a lot of things we really want to highlight. But I played for Coach Drummond. I can tell you this. He prepares his golf team just like any football coach would with the scouting report, just like any basketball coach. I mean, if you're going to go out to Valley Vista, he might give you a handout in the van on hitting uphill lies and downhill lies and some things to think about. Now, is he making you a better ball striker on side hill lies on the way out there? I don't know if he is or not, but what he is doing, and you've alluded to this, he's getting high school kids focused in on the way to Bainbridge to play a different type of course. You see what I'm saying? So it's just, it was his preparation and his focus on detail. And I think that's a little bit of what you're talking about, that regardless of the sport, there's a preparation that has to take place.
And I think knowing Coach Paxton and knowing Coach Drummond fairly well, both these guys, that's exactly the word I described them. They pay attention to detail. And I think that's all the difference.
Good stuff there. Number three, we go a double dozen, highlighting the Uniota cross country and golf programs.
Number two,
a fun fall for the Lady Pioneers. And I say that, Jeremy, this is awfully impressive. Zane Trace volleyball SVC champs went to the regional. The soccer Lady Pioneers regional runner-up, cross-country SVC champs, had several successful runs there in the district regional and on the state with some kids. Just, it's an amazing thing. I know there's an enrollment difference there compared to a lot of other schools, but nonetheless, you talk about maximizing your athletes. What an incredible just stretch of sports there for the red, white, and blue. Your take on that fall?
No, no question. We talked about golf earlier, so we just hope they don't have a girls' golf team next year. The rest of the league, that is. But, yeah, that's just super impressive, and I don't care what your enrollment is. You don't see, you know, just because you know, some of the private Division I schools, all girls schools, you don't see them doing that three in a sport very often, three sports in the same season. That's just remarkable.
Well, and then what's so impressive about that too is how so many of those fall athletes went on to play other sports, and you see them individually, maybe split up a little bit, but I mean, goodness, it kind of continued on, didn't it? I mean, a very successful winter for Coach Dunkel again, and then you see what Gino and company is doing here in softball, and then obviously the track team is crazy good there at Zane Trace. So I guess we kind of single out the fall season, but really it's kind of just a special run of female athletes at Zane Trace in general, isn't it?
Yeah, I agree. That is just a wonderful group to watch, and all the diversity from sport to sport, the different types of athletes they have, and just seeing that culminate into team success and individual success.
Absolutely. There with Carl and Strasbourg on the volleyball side, and I know Fry and some other kids had some great numbers put up there in soccer. So congratulations to the Lady Pioneers. Again, on our number two, we go a fun fall for the Lady Pioneers, highlighting volleyball, soccer, and cross country.
And the number one highlight from SVCSportsZone.com's Year in Review.
Some records are made not to be broken. And to be quite honest, Jeremy, this one was pretty easy to get to the top of the list right off the bat. We go to a night actually where they lose. Talking Edina volleyball here, of course. Westfall defeats Edina back on Tuesday, August 28th. In straight sets, 21, 22, 21. But even in a loss, it kind of was a one last time to celebrate just an incredible streak. 98 straight SVC wins. The home wins was 142 as those come to an end. But I think it's safe to use the headline, some records are made not to be broken, because that's that's just something crazy. That's just I can't even fathom how that would ever be approached. Just your take on such an amazing run that goes clear back into the 90s.
Yeah, and I think if you go back into the 90s, and we spoke about this earlier with golf, and you know, even your reference to a model for success, when you look at what Adina and the volleyball program has done for the rest of the area and the SVC in particular, how, you know, what they have been able to do and the things that they do, how that's been modeled by so many other successful programs, and it's just remarkable to see how that's raised the level of players and how many athletes that has turned on to volleyball, just the remarkable success of the Adina Warriors.
Again, our top story, some records are made not to be broken, highlighting the incredible run of Adina volleyball. So fans, there you have it, our top 10 stories from the past year. And before we call it quits here on SVC Sports Talk, Jeremy and I, we'll both peek ahead to 2013-2014 with a few bold predictions. We invite you to stay with us and see if you agree or disagree. Either way, we'll have all summer to debate it all. Well, Jeremy, as I said, I know we're running a little over our normal time here in the final show, but we had not only our top 10, but we just ended up having some great inbox questions and comments that I just thought, in fairness to those supporters, we needed to get those on. And I guess this was a little bit of the same, some fans wanting us to kind of look ahead to next year and do some things. So I guess what I'll do because of time is I'll just kind of throw out a synopsis here and then allow you a chance to comment or maybe pick one out that you think's worth mention. I guess when I look to the fall, I'm looking at things that could be different. Is Zane Trace volleyball still going to be there? There's no Cobb or Kello in the league. Is Adina going to return? The league says hello to a kid named Ricky McGill, who I think is going to be a really special talent in our volleyball league. In football, who's the next Westfall quarterback? Can that run continue? Is PV going to come back on top with some of the young talent that I know finished the year strong? Soccer continues to grow. When I look at winter, my notes here, Southeastern basketball has been the dominant dynasty in the history of our league. Is it time for them to come back on top in the boys' side? And can Zane Trace girls take that step and maybe go over the top of Uniota, who I know is going to be the pick of a lot? And then in spring, obviously Adina baseball here this in the last week or so has kind of really got people talking about next year there. The sophomore class and softball is just ridiculous. And then we talked about the track streaks of Uniota and Zane Trace. So when I throw all those predictions out there or those headlines out there, Jeremy, give me something that jumps out at you or maybe just an overall headline of what you're looking at 2013-2014.
First of all, I'm interested to see how some of the boys' basketball programs progress in the offseason, and I think the timing could be right. You have the big losses that Ironton had and the Piketon had, and there's going to be some opportunities there for especially in Division III to make a long tournament run. And I definitely feel like we have some teams that are capable of taking that next step and really solidifying themselves as the elite Division III programs beyond just the SVC, but in the district. And the other thing that comes to mind is just interesting to see how this class of 2015 that'll be juniors next year, how are they going to transition to that? You know, we've given a lot of fanfare as freshmen and sophomores, and you know, what are they going to do their final 2 years when they become, you know, the veterans of the league? And are they going to be able to carry their teams? Are they going to be able to stay motivated to continue to improve? Because we definitely have some special athletes, and you know, honestly, we have a lot of next level athletes in our conference right now. So it's going to be really interesting to see where some of those kids decide to go to school and to how their careers progress the next couple of years.
That's a really good point you make there, Jeremy. I'd really encourage fans to go look at the all-league teams in volleyball and basketball and softball and look at the number of sophomores. The class is really, really a special group, and I do think that's going to make for some interesting competition. So I'll tell you what a fun year. I appreciate everything you've done, Jeremy. Appreciate, obviously, DBK services and media services and everything they've done for the show. Just a lot of fun. So I guess on that point, I'll say for the final time here in season two of SVC Sports Talk, I say thank you to Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Thank you to Valero, to Dr. Chris Good, Adena Sports Medicine, and all the sponsors here on SVCSportsZone.com. Special thank you to Bruce Knox and DBK Media Services, and of course you, Jeremy Ward. This is Shane Combs reminding fans to keep visiting SVCSportsZone.com, where we are 100% SVC, 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC, 100% of the time.